You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Is it starting to look like 1988? If you're Los Angeles, you hope so. Remember the beat LA chants that we would always hear? Certainly when it came to basketball in the Boston Garden or some of the other arenas. It's starting to feel like 1988 when the Lakers won the NBA title, the Dodgers won the World Series, and Los Angeles became the envy of the sports world as the first and only city to have NBA champions and World Series champions in the same year. Game one coming up tonight with Clayton Kershaw on the mound for the Dodgers. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com. We'll get to phone calls here. The great Doc Emmerich, he just announced his retirement. He'll join us coming up in about 20 minutes. When Dak Prescott got hurt, there was reason to think the Cowboys' offense wouldn't miss a lot with Andy Dalton in there. And Dalton, he went to the Pro Bowl three times. He's taken teams to the playoffs in Cincinnati. But it's not that simple. For one thing, the Cowboys have had so many injuries, certainly to that offensive line, and it's in shambles right now. And then you have to factor in Dak Prescott's, his talent. And I think we probably underrated his talent there. Sometimes we assume offensive line. I don't know if anybody would look comfortable behind that offensive line, but they were blown out in a game at home against the Cardinals. And at 2-4, they're still in the lead in the NFC East. But last night's loss raises a lot of questions here. You get a sense that Dak Prescott was probably cleaning up a few of the messier things than we knew. Dalton will settle down. Dallas has to improve. I don't know what's going to happen on defense. But if that offense is able to run the ball, control the clock a little bit, not have that Cowboys defense out there exposed, then they have a chance to win a couple of games that maybe they shouldn't. You know, I got to factor in the Cardinals with what they did last night. You know, they were aggressive on defense. Buda Baker, their safety, is the highest paid safety in the league. They're 4-2 right now. And Kyler hasn't played great the last couple of weeks. He didn't play great last night. And this was a homecoming because he has never lost in that stadium. He's 7-0 going back to his high school days and college. But you know, they got a good running back, got a couple of good wide receivers. I mean, you forget about Christian Kirk. And you got DeAndre Hopkins, Larry Fitzgerald. They got a good team. Offensively, they got a pretty good team. Chandler Jones out for the season. One of the great sack guys in the last few years. But, you know, they're 4-2. They get sort of lost in that NFC West. But they have that potential. Like, you're not going to get four teams from the same division making the playoffs. But they have that spoiler alert, it feels like, every time you're playing them. Yeah, McLevin.
Are we ready to say Cliff Kingsbury's a good NFL coach? I mean, it's pretty early stuff.
Well, he wasn't a pretty good college coach. I think he was an average coach. But I think he's got his guy. I think that's the important thing is you got to find your quarterback. When you find your quarterback, then you worry about everything else. It's look at these franchises who don't have a quarterback. All you do is think about what are we going to do at quarterback? The Bears, it was, you know, Mitchell Trubisky or Nick Foles. Mitchell Trubisky, like, what are we going to do? Once you settle and you have that quarterback, it's a great relief. Washington doesn't have a starting quarterback right now. And they have three quarterbacks on the roster, but they don't have a starting quarterback. And just the uncertainty of every week going into a game, and you're not quite sure how your quarterback is going to play. And that's why everybody is searching to find their guy. And I know that the Jets, if the Jets have the number one pick and they take Trevor Lawrence, that doesn't solve all their issues. It's a bad franchise. Not a bad team. They're a bad franchise. Like, they supersede bad team. It's bad franchise. Because bad team, that's year to year. Bad franchise, that's been hovering around. You know, that's a scent that stays around the garbage can for a long time, even when you throw the garbage out. Yeah, Paul.
And Dan, when you're saying with quarterbacks, you could be a bad team but feel like a decent team because of the quarterback situation. Like, the Bengals feel like they're going the right direction. They're 1-4, but they feel with Joe Burrow that they're going, and the Chargers are 1-4 again, but they feel like, hey, they got the right draft pick.
But it's how you build out that team. If you get Trevor Lawrence, who's running the team and do you trust them? It goes back to what I've said about the Cleveland Browns. We'd go into a draft and people would say, well, the Browns are loaded. They got a couple of first round draft picks. And I would always say it's one thing to have first round draft picks. It's another thing to do something with those first round draft picks. If you're taking Brandon Whedon, then you're not going to get any better. Johnny Manziel, you're not going to get any better. It's going back to what the Ravens have done for the last decade or longer. They drafted well, and they didn't have high draft picks. When they did, they cashed in. When you take Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden in a draft, you know what the hell you're doing. And those are guys that went to the Hall of Fame. Those are guys that you build around, my left tackle and my linebacker. And that's where Ozzie Newsome should be in the Hall of Fame. Is Ozzie Newsome in the Hall of Fame, McLevin?
I think as a player, but I'll double check that.
I don't know if he's in as a player, but as a front office exec?
He should be. By the way, guess what? Joe Douglas was in Baltimore from 2000 to 2014, the Jets GM.
Well, I hope something rubbed off there.
Yeah.
Because he's got to find his coach, and he's got to find if – I don't think Sam Darnold is the quarterback for them. Ozzie is in the Hall of Fame, Paulie?
Both college and pro as tight end.
Oh, good. And maybe he'll go in there as an executive. Yeah, McLovin.
His last pick, I think, was Lamar Jackson, right? I mean, his last first-round pick. I think he was there, and that's a pretty good sign-off for a guy at the end of his career.
We were wondering about who's going to win the NFC East. There are four teams to win an NFL division with a record under 500. 500 or worse. The 08 Chargers went 8-8. The Seahawks in 2010 were 7-9. Wasn't that the Marshawn Lynch game against the Saints in Seattle? Does that sound right, McLevin?
The earthquake game? I'm double-checking. Was that? It was definitely against
they
the
won. They hosted a playoff game. I thought it was against the Saints in Seattle.
Beastquake.
Yes. The Broncos went 8-8 in 2011, and the Panthers went 7-8-1 in 2014. And you know what those four teams have in common? They all won their first playoff game.
Ah, kind of debunks our new rule change.
I know. I thought as we move forward, you have if you win your division and you have a sub 500 record, then you don't get. You can get in as a wild card, but you don't get to host a playoff game.
What about this? How about the entire division loses the playoff bid? So like the NFC East this year, if the Cowboys are 7-9 and win the division, that playoff bid floats as the next wild card. And now the Arizona Cardinals get in or the Rams get in.
Well, I don't want to make it too.
Come on. It's like every decade.
I mean,
why should be rewarded for sucking?
I just think if you have a sub 500 record and you win your division, that you can't host a playoff game. I think that's only fair.
It's a good start.
The Chiefs over the Bills last night, and they did it with their ground attack, and the Cardinals rolled the Cowboys 38-10. World Series coming up tonight. I'm looking at Clayton Kershaw's postseason stats. I think this is a situation that you may not like the Dodgers, but I don't know how you cannot root for Clayton Kershaw to pitch well, except for a Tampa fan. And I'm going to watch and probably be holding my breath throughout the whole game there with Clayton Kershaw. Angels fans probably aren't rooting for him either. Astros fans probably not either. Postseason career, he's 11-12 in 28 starts. ERA is 4.31. He's 3-6 in the National League Championship Series. He's 1-2 in the World Series. Like if I said this pitcher is also in the regular season, he wins 70% of the time. 175 and 76. So he's 100 games over 500. And 2.43 ERA. By far the best ERA of his generation. That's the same pitcher who has those numbers in the postseason. I mean, if you go with an A-plus and a C-minus, and that's what you have with Clayton Kershaw. And it's not all on him, but this is the guy that's getting paid over $35 million. And we wondered about his velocity. He started to lose velocity. And you know, he's a guy who tops out maybe at 92, 93. But a lot of it is that location with that velocity. Because that velocity can get you in trouble. If they sit on something, then you're going to get in trouble. And I wondered if he was tipping his pitches when you go back to the series against the Cardinals a couple of years ago. Because they teed off on him. And you'll hear the ball. You go back to the sound of the Astros. When the Astros were banging the garbage cans, if you listen to how hard those balls are hit, that's a team that knows what's coming. It's not one of those, a little flare here or, you know, a sharp single. That is hitting the ball square. You know, you start to, that's when you wonder. And you know, they teed off on Clayton Kershaw. But this game now is, you know, you either they swing and miss or they hit home runs. That's what they're trying to do. That's it. The analytics, to me, has ruined baseball because everybody subscribes to this now. You know, my third baseman is over by second base. Go ahead, bunt. We don't care. John Smoltz was telling that to us yesterday. You would think I can get on base, but your analytics will tell you we don't care about that. Like, we want you to swing. If you swing and miss, okay. And I kept thinking, how crazy is that? I can bunt right down the third base line. No, nobody practices it. Remember, we would always, like, you got into batting practice, and then before you got out, you had to do a little bunt, or you would do bunting before you started to swing. And then your last one would be maybe a bunt. Yeah, see.
And like, you only have to do it two or three times before they stop playing the shift on you, right?
That's why when these hitters go, oh, the shift is unfair. I'm guessing if I bunt it down the third base line, they may not play the shift every time I'm up. Yes, McLevin, you want to defend analytics?
Well, I'd rather just lose by 10 runs than bunt against a shift.
Wow.
I mean, come on. You might as well just relegate them to minors if you're going to bunt against a shift. What kind of hitter?
What happened to getting on base? Remember, walks as good as a hit? What happened to that?
Pride.
Like, what do they say now in Little League? No, do they say walks as good as hit? Hey, don't be afraid to whiff. It's okay.
No bingo, babe.
Yeah. Analytics says it's okay to strike out. Come on, babe.
Walks as good as a hit. I know. I lived by that.
Oh, I did too.
Oh.
Like, I tried to get hit one time. And I leaned into the pitch, and oh, got me right on the elbow. That's the last time I took one for the team. Hey, wait, take one for the team there, Danny. All right, baby. Come on. Yeah. Rub some dirt on it. Dirt.
Remember the end of Major League? Remember Tom Berenger points as if he's going to call in his shot, and he lays out a little donk bunt and makes it to first base?
Yeah, McLovin.
I watched Moneyball. Because Netflix pushed it to me about 1,000 times this weekend.
Oh, man.
I don't know if you guys did too, but it's insane that for 100 years of baseball, walks don't count in your batting average. It's like not counting foul shots as points. It should have been the same as a single. What is the difference?
There is an art. I mean, we talk about having a great eye, but they don't reward you with anything. It's a non-at-bat.
But Brad Pitt, my baseball guru, kept saying, like, listen, you're wearing down the pitcher. You're going to get into their bullpen, which is less pitchers.
Yeah.
They're going to have to throw fastballs over the middle of the plate. I mean, clearly taking pitches is the key.
I wonder if they started promoting Moneyball. I know because of the postseason, but I was thinking of the Houston Rockets because weren't they sort of, they were basketball's version of Moneyball?
Yeah, Daryl Morey.
Yeah, the analytics. Very much so. The analytics. He was trying to do something. Do you see where he said he took out a full page ad in the Houston Chronicle, I think, and said, my thanks to the city of Houston and James Harden, who changed my life.
He said James Harden transformed basketball more than any player in recent history.
And even more so than Steph Curry, which I find interesting. Steph did it, I think, in a positive way. I don't know if James Harden did.
Well, I got to tell you, Luka Doncic does a lot of James Harden stuff. I don't know who came first.
But. Well, Steph Curry won titles.
Yeah.
I do know that.
But guys like pushing their body in to get a foul and taking long shots. I don't know. There is a lot of James Harden in the young scorers.
The Warriors passed the ball.
Right. No, I'm not saying it's all good. But I think you could argue.
I don't think what Daryl did and D'Antoni did in Houston was good for basketball.
No, I agree.
I think it helped. It's like, you know, it helped ruin basketball, in my opinion.
But why? I don't know. Is small ball baseball that entertaining to the young crowds? Don't they like home runs?
You know what? You know what is not entertaining? When you throw and then you swing and then you miss and you strike out 200 times, therefore the ball doesn't get in play.
Well, how about a Cody Bellinger walk-off?
Analytics has helped kill baseball.
Nobody wants to see Tommy Herr, Willie McGee playing hit and run.
Do you want to see movement? You want to see some guy up there adjusting 68 times. A guy comes in. Oh, he throws 98. Oh, big shocker. And he's going to swing for a home run or he's going to strike out. And that's entertaining? And are home runs that entertaining? The beauty of baseball is when it moves. When things happen, like basketball. That whole two-man game, boring. Isolation, boring. You go back and watch old basketball. I promise, if you watch the Portland Trailblazers when they beat the 76ers with Dr. J, Jack Ramsey was the coach. That is as pure of the purest form of basketball I've seen in a long, long, long time. Movement. You had guys who weren't stars. They understood how to play the game. And it was great to watch. Baseball's hard to watch because everybody throws 98 and everybody is working on exit velocity and their launch angle. Yes, McLovin.
But you were right there with me. We were all there for Maguire, Sosa. Like, we were, you know, home runs have a certain thrill. And were you going to remember Cody Bellinger's home run?
No, I'm going to remember Mookie Betts. And his defensive plays. And the base running errors of the Atlanta Braves. Yes, Paul.
Andrew, if you were a GM, would you rather have a player that led the majors in on-base percentage or home runs?
Home runs. Because on-base percentage is good, but I want OPS. I can't remember what that means at the moment, but I definitely want it.
You don't want to go down this road with him, Paulie. Remember when he told me that Adam Dunn was a valuable baseball player?
Juan Soto of the Nationals led the league in OPS and on-base percentage. He also had about 13 home runs.
He's a superstar.
Yeah, he's a great player.
No one goes to the game. No little kids bring their mitt to the game and say, man, I can't wait for some nice on-base percentage.
Today. Dad, what's his OPS?
I could catch some on-base percentage in my mitt.
Yeah. It's just baseball has slowed down.
But when I was a kid, I liked Dave Kingman. I liked Greg Luzinski. I collected their cards. I wanted the big sluggers, you know, not the effective players, really.
I don't know. I'm amazed that I can bunt and get on, but nobody wants to bunt.
It's the underhanded free throw of baseball.
Yes.
Because you don't want to be embarrassed shooting underhanded free throws, even though you could shoot 80%. You don't want to bunt because then you look like you don't have any stick, any power.
Yes.
But when's the last time that you saw in a baseball game that a guy lays down a bunt? Because part of what's exciting about it is the element of surprise, right? You're not expecting it. When's the last time you saw a guy lay down a bunt and you went, oh, what the hell's he doing? You're like, whoa, he bunted. You know, there's always a certain element of excitement rather than like, oh, I'm going to turn this off. The guy just laid down a bunt.
It's like
that never happens when you're watching baseball.
What's the most exciting play in baseball, McLovin?
A home run.
No, the triple. Not the home run.
Who led the league in triples? No one ever knows.
Yeah, but who led the league last year in home runs? Nobody knows that either anymore.
Luke Voit led.
Voigt.
Yeah. Wow. Who led the league in bunts last year, Paulie?
Brandon Belt.
Yeah.
Seven bunts.
Yeah.
Sign him up.
Yeah.
You know that these sluggers are going to get up there and bunt it out of bounds every time. It's not easy to do that bunt.
It was for us. Just make sure you hide the finger. Don't have that finger out there because you could, you know, you got to take it and then you just deaden it a little bit there. I loved a sacrifice bunt. Just
you're 6'3". You got to be swinging for the fences.
It didn't matter. I was a team player. I got to get that runner over. I'd move the runner. I'd hit it to the second base side. I got to get that runner over to third.
GMs would have not given you the contract
they
unless
would
you
not.
Swung for
well,
the fences.
But if they saw how I could throw, they would say, all right, he's not going to hit anything, but he can bring some cheese. Yes, Todd.
The coaches appreciate it, but were your fellow teammates high-fiving you when you got back to the dugout after advancing the runner over from first to second?
Yes.
They were? They were pumped for
you? Yes, of course they were. At least I think they were. All right, we'll get to phone calls here. I almost said phony calls. I think I'm back to McLovin's analytics here. Analytics is ruining sports.
I love that I'm the face of the analytics. Like, the guys who are actually doing analytics are so smart and successful. Like, they all went to Harvard. They're, like, nuclear physicists.
Who's more successful, you or the GM of the Rockets?
Daryl Morey.
Daryl Morey. Who's more successful?
Oh, I mean, Daryl Morey is basically...
Are you sure?
I mean, I think... Remember he used to pull your stats, by the way? He basically started out as Ethan.
You have been part of a show that's been nominated three times for the best studio show.
Daryl Morey sent a five-word tweet that changed the entire world.
That's true. And then he didn't say anything for the next 8 months.
It cost him his job.
Yeah. Basically, the NBA said, I think you need to get rid of Morey here so we can get back into China. We got billions here. You guys can lose Morey, right? We got to get back into China here.
You love Daryl Morey, by the way.
I love Daryl Morey.
You had a fun interview with him.
But I don't think the Rockets' style of basketball has been good for basketball. That's all. And I'm not get off my lawn guy. I'm open to all of this. I'm just saying baseball. Seton doesn't. He gave me the look like, All right, I'm going to take a break here.
He gave you this suburban housewife judgmental look.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe I'm the get off my lawn guy. I just loved baseball because there's movement. I love basketball. There's movement. All right. 22 after the hour. Doc Emmerich will join us coming up next here on the Dan Patrick Show. I told this to Todd. You want a 12-ounce ribeye. You don't buy the entire cow.
No, you don't.
No, you don't need to. Friends, this is what happens. AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, they charge you obscene monthly fees for the data you'll never need and perks you'll never use. It's in the fine print there. They lock you in. They put their hooks in you. And that's why I'm saying, fight! Resist! Pure Talk USA only charges you for the data you need. They're on the exact same towers, so you get the same great coverage, half the cost. Unlimited talk. Text. 2 gigs of data, $20 a month. Average person saving $400 a year. And it's really simple to do it. You can do it from your phone. Dial #250 and say, Dan Patrick. Immediately, you save 50% off your first month. Once again, unlimited talk, text, 2 gigs of data, all for $20 a month from your cell phone. #250, say Dan Patrick. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from our friends at Pure Talk USA. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. This award-nominated program, we don't win awards, we get nominated. Brought to you by Mercedes-AMG. Do you suffer from lead foot? Do goosebumps appear for no reason? Stop living with uninspired performance. Visit mbusa.com/AMG and find out if a Mercedes-AMG coupe, sedan, or SUV is right for you. Mercedes-AMG, driving performance. We'll get to your phone calls. Everybody's all fired up because I mentioned analytics here. Don't tell me baseball's exciting now. I don't want to hear it. And the Rocket style of basketball, I don't want to hear it. Golden State, all right, I'm all ears. That's a great style of basketball, fun style of basketball, exciting style of basketball. I got Jay Billis texting me, Josh Duhamel texting me. Everybody's all over, you know. Let me get to Doc Emmerich. He's a professional. He's not going to yell at me today. Or maybe he is.
No.
What do you want to talk about, Doc?
Never would I yell at you. Okay. You remember this era?
Oh, yeah, your Buccos.
Yeah, Clemente was pretty exciting, wasn't he?
And he was a great all-around player. You know, he was a wonderful outfielder, had one of the great arms in baseball history. But baseball has no movement anymore, Doc.
When I went to, my parents took me to Comiskey Park in 1956 to see the Red Sox play the White Sox. When Ted Williams came to the plate, Nellie Fox, the second baseman, went into short right field. Louis Aparicio, the shortstop, went to the right of second base. Sammy Esposito, the third baseman, took a position closer to second base, but halfway through. And that was odd that there was a shift for Ted.
Yeah.
But he was the one guy that happened to. But he was a rarity. And, of course, he tried to blast it through the right side of the infield all the time. But now it's so common because of what you were talking about. But why would no one today want to lay down the bunt that you were talking about with no one on that side of the infield to try to do anything about it? I don't know. But I guess I just have too much gray hair. I do love baseball. I like watching it even today. But I don't have a very successful team to watch, but I still watch it.
But the how did analytics change the NHL?
Well, I don't know that it has very much, even though we have teams that are heavily into it now. If it has, it hasn't for me, because it's still, in my mind, it's still a game that's played with so much heart and commitment and soul, and it has to be. It's so much emotion, and it's so spontaneous. As Emil Francis said, it's a slippery game. They play it on ice. There's only so much that you can structure about it, and there still are some coaches in our league that do look at it and shrug and then go to the bench and coach on by the seat of their pants, and they've been very successful at it.
Doc's got a new book, Off Mic, How a Kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana Became America's NHL Voice. But you're retiring. Why now?
Well, it seemed like the right time. And a lot of people that had retired said I would know. And for me, I knew, I think, between the second and third rounds of the playoffs this year. NBC had been so wonderful to me, Dan, to allow me to continue to work at my house. I have a few more boxes than the average guy to check off when it comes to this type of world that we're in right now. My birth certificate is one. My cancer history is another. And they said, we won't have you do anything you're not comfortable doing. And at this time, going out and doing that was not comfortable for me. So they set up this wonderful studio that I'm sitting in right now. And then they allowed me to continue on, even though the truck and all of the crew went to Edmonton. I did not. And it was at that time that it crossed my mind that 50 years ago, Ken Dryden was a rookie and I was a newspaper reporter while teaching college in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. Joe Namath had just left there a few years ago to be a part of a Super Bowl champion. And here I was covering hockey and Ken Dryden was a rookie and Bobby Hall was still playing for the Blackhawks and Bobby Orr for the Bruins. And that's a long time past. And here I am still healthy and safe and my wife is too. And I've been very fortunate, and the round number of 50 and the round number of 40 doing games made me think that this is a good time and this was the right time for that. So for the last two rounds, the one thing I wanted to do, Dan, was to work really hard and make sure that I did not coast, even though in my mind the decision had been made at that point.
Do you have a tape of your first game that you did, play-by-play?
I don't have a tape of that one. I have some from that season. They're not really too good, but I still have them, yes. And I always encourage people who are getting into this line of work, whenever you do your first game, make sure you save the tape. And I didn't. It was a game in Toledo, Ohio. I didn't save that one. But save your first one because you'll look back on it and you'll realize how far you've come when you listen to what you were like a long time ago.
When did you understand the importance of vocabulary?
Grade five, I had a teacher in our little school in Indiana who said, any word that you use five times belongs to you for life. That was a rule then. And then when I was in grad school at Miami University, we were probably losing to your school in basketball on a regular basis. But when I was going back and forth to Dayton, Ohio, to watch International Hockey League games, I would talk to everybody in the press box, and their broadcaster, Lyle Stieg, who later did 1 year of the Washington Capitals, said, if you can come up with a different way of saying all the repeating things that happen in a game of hockey, that will help you. Because if you say dumped in from center ice every time, you'll drive people nuts. So I tried to do that, and it's not a conspiratorial thing with my vocabulary. It's just the way I talk. So the dogs don't understand me, but hopefully enough people do that I kept working all these years.
The Dayton Gems, that was the first hockey game I ever went to.
You're kidding.
First hockey game.
How long ago was that?
It's got to be, I'm going to guess, a good 50 years ago.
So you probably saw a few scraps.
Yes. I was fascinated with that, you know, because...
so was I.
Yeah, my dad said, we're going to go to a hockey game. And we're like, okay, because we grew up in a baseball, football, basketball household. And we went to Dayton and watched the Dayton Gems. I couldn't remember anything other than there were a hell of a lot of fights there. It felt like, you know, they would interrupt a fight to have a hockey game. but it was all of, I was like, wow, they get to punch each other. And I never wanted to play hockey after that.
No, and that was the fascinating part to me 60 years ago when I saw my first game too. I didn't know offsides and icing after I saw my first game live. But I remember, and I try to keep it in mind each time that I do a game, that for somebody in the arena that night, and maybe somebody watching at home, it's their very first game. And there's nothing that's more exciting than a game live, and especially that first game. It never leaves your mind. Sometimes when I get to talk to journalism classes, if it's small enough, I ask each of them to stand up and talk about the first major event they ever saw. And it's amazing the clarity and detail they remember. And invariably, when they're telling the story, there's a smile on their face because they do remember a lot about it. And then I say, imagine doing that for 40 years and being paid to do it. You were talking earlier about the longevity of a coach, and you were talking about whether McLovin had a better job than a coach. Yeah, the Danettes have had great job stability for a long time, a lot better than coaches have.
Yeah, I told him. I think McLovin has had a pretty good run here. I don't know if he appreciates it, Doc, but
I think he does have the one request that I make, and you hinted at it earlier, and I thought maybe Fritzy had tipped you off because I can't get there for the long-awaited four free throws that you had promised me.
Yes,
that at some time of your choosing, that each of the Danettes would get a free throw, you would get four, and that McLovin would be the anchor man, but your four would have to be shot, because you're so good, your four would have to be shot like Ollie and Hoosier's.
Underhand.
And like I was taught in grade school when I was on the seventh grade team, underhand.
How good were you in seventh grade at basketball?
it's a story that I only tell family. There were 2 seconds to go in our game against the Rohan Indians, and I was brought to the line with two foul shots, and I sank them both. And because of that, we went to overtime and we won. But the punchline to the story is we were seventh graders, and Rohan brought their sixth grade team.
You can leave that out of this story.
But I shot underhand,
and you made him.
There was a poster on the wall next to the dressing room that taught you how to shoot underhand, and we were expected to shoot that way. But it was a long time ago.
A player today would rather miss a free throw than make a free throw shooting it underhand.
Yeah, that's right. It's like all style points now.
if you could call one more game in any sport.
I don't know what it would be or when. I think what I would have liked to have done if I could have gone back into the past would have been to have called. See, I got to do Wayne Gretzky's last game on Fox. That was at Madison Square Garden against Pittsburgh in 1999. I would have loved, because the three players that I always admired a lot, and I only got to call one of their games, was Gretzky. But either Bobby Orr or Gordie Howe, I would have liked to have done their last game, because the memory of doing Gretzky's last game still resonates with me, because it was so cherished by the Garden fans. Even though the Rangers lost the game, everybody left with a smile on their face. And I would have liked to have either done Bobby Orr's last game or Gordie Howe's. But I wasn't broadcasting in the NHL at that time, so no chance.
Off mic, how a kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana became America's NHL voice. It's being released today. You can purchase it online or wherever books are sold. Thank you for your friendship. I don't want to get emotional. But thank you.
It's a lot of fun too, and have Fritzy tell me the outcome of whenever you guys decide to shoot the free throws. And I will mention one other thing: any money I get from the sale of the book, people should feel good about buying it because it all goes to the hands-on care of animals. It's a very important cause to my wife and me. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Okay.
Thank you. Stay in touch. We'll bother you. Okay?
Okay.
All right. That's the great Doc Emmerich. We'll take a break here. Last call for phone calls coming up here on the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Always great to talk to Doc Emmerich. Good man. Truly a good man. If I told you a starting quarterback coming off a good performance just got benched, who would come to mind? Coming off a winning performance and the team has a winning record, just got benched. Would you have guessed Ryan Fitzpatrick? Because Tua Tagovailoa is going to get the start coming up this weekend. I guess they've seen all they need to see in those, three or four snaps that he had in the mop-up duty against the Jets. They're 3-3. And Ryan Fitzpatrick couldn't have been happier when Tua went into the game. I don't know how he feels now. He knew it was inevitable, but Tua's going to get the start. Yes, Paulie.
What's the mentality there with the Dolphins? The Patriots just lost two. Bills just lost two. The Dolphins just won two in a row. They're the best team in the division right now, point differential-wise. Why take your starting quarterback out now?
I'm surprised because Ryan Fitzpatrick has not hurt the Dolphins. He's helped the Dolphins. He's played well. And is this a home game for Tua? Who do they play next? Do they play the Jets?
Well, they just played the Jets, and I see the Rams at Miami next.
Oh, okay. I thought they – oh, God, Aaron Donald.
I think they have a –
They had a bye week. I thought that they had a bye week, and then didn't they play the Jets again?
Was that a COVID change? I'm not sure if I'm looking at an updated schedule. I think they got moved around because of the schedule change, but I'll double-check.
Okay. That now becomes must-see TV. I was looking at some of these games, Steelers-Titans, Seahawks-Cardinals, Niners-Patriots, Bucks-Raiders Sunday night. Bears Rams Monday night. So they don't play the Rams, McLovin. At least the schedule that Fritzy sent me.
Yeah, Bears Rams should be the Monday night game.
Yeah. Panthers Saints. So I don't.
Yeah, it's a bye week.
Yeah. And then do they play the Jets again?
I still seeing the Rams in Miami.
Okay. But maybe that's the case. I thought they played the Jets within a 3-week or 4-week span. Yeah, Paul.
I think I get a half point for half calling this. I said they should start him against New York in October 18th, Miami Dolphins, Tua, because then you got Jets, bye week Jets. Now they had to change it around because of the different moves of games.
I'll give you a win. Yes,
I'll say half a point.
Yeah, Rams-Bears is this week, but the Dolphins are on a bye. So they did the change with 10 days off. Yeah.
Yes, Eden.
It'd be funny, though, if the Dolphins got their schedule confused and thought they were playing the worst game. They're like, oh, Aaron Donald. Oh, why don't you sit again?
On second thought.
Just a little more time.
Ryan, come on in. Yeah. You're our starter. All right. I'm all eyes. I'm fascinated by this. Yes, McLovin.
One thing about the Rams, Aaron Donald's amazing. The rest of that defense, I would describe as a finesse defense.
Yeah, you got a pretty good defensive back there, don't you?
With the Rams?
Yeah.
Jalen Ramsey?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But Watson, did you see Deebo Samuel running? They were like little kids trying to tackle an adult. They do not tackle. That's what I'm saying. They're completely unscary.
Jason in Indiana joins us. Hi, Jason. What do you have for me today?
Hey, guys. I'm doing well today, and I just wanted to let you guys know that you just talked to Doc Emmerich, and what you might not know or what people may not know is that Doc actually, when he started into play-by-playing, the first thing he actually did was he took a little recorder up to the corner of the arena where the Comets play their games in Fort Wayne. And the guy that was broadcasting for the Comets then, his name is Bob Case, and he actually helped give Doc Emmerich head start way back in the 60s, and it was just great to see, because Bob would go on to broadcast for 63 years all told, all for the Comets here in my town, my city, and Doc would do his work, and they would actually meet in 2016 for Bob's 90th birthday. He passed away that year on Thanksgiving, but
that's a pretty those hockey announcers, they stayed doing it for a long time, and Doc certainly did. Patricia in Florida.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Patricia.
I'm a longtime fan of yours. I've been following you since you used to have, what's his name now?
Rob Dibble? Keith Olbermann.
Keyshawn. I like when you interview Keyshawn, I think, on Mondays, and now you have Reggie Miller.
Yeah.
But I'm a longtime sports fan. I had seven brothers. I grew up in South Bend, so I bled blue and gold. I remember my first quarterback was probably Terry Hanratty. I think he was number five.
Number five, yep.
So I followed Notre Dame, and then I moved to Gardena, California, and became a huge Laker fan. I still have a VCR tape of the 86-87 Lakers back-to-back championship.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also was a huge Dodger fan, and we happened to be camping. I was going to miss the World Series because we were going camping up in the Sequoias. So I missed the championship game but we listened to it on the radio when Kirk Gibson hit the home run. So I just wanted to call and say I really enjoy listening to you. I love sports. I love basketball. I'm still a Laker fan. I appreciate how you always stand behind LeBron James when everybody else is bashing him. Well, he seems like a great man.
Patricia, thank you. Thank you for being a fan. Final results of the poll question there, McLovin.
Who's going to win the NFC least? Eagles run away with it, almost 60%.
Tampa Bay head coach Bruce Arians will join us on the program tomorrow. Sorry I didn't get to the other phone calls there. This day in sports history, Paulie?
Fall of 1986, Patricia bought a VCR this day in sports history.
Oh, wow.
86, fall of 86, Patricia, VCR.
All right. Thank you, Paulie. She also went to the Sequoias, saw the Sequoias.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Hello, Todd, what'd you learn today?
If you win your division with a losing record, Paulie's starting a movement to keep that team out of the playoffs completely.
McLovin.
The Packers almost drafted David Pollock instead of Aaron Rodgers.
Seton O'Connor.
Doc Emmerich, not so emotional.
No, I was going to get emotional. He's like, all right. I don't want to get emotional. All right. Yes, Paulie.
Patricia's life story. That's what I learned.
What we learned brought to you by Breeders' Cup, November 6th and 7th, the world's best thoroughbreds compete in 14 exhilarating races at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more, breederscup.com/2020. Catch all the action live on NBC Sports. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Enjoy the World Series tonight.